outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is The God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, John Lynch, welcome to The God Journey number 802. How about that? We've done 800 of these.
I'm on there somewhere way, way back, I think.
Yeah, you're on back in 2009 and 2014. We had a couple of occasions where we crossed paths back in the day. For those of you who don't know John Lynch, John is the author of a number of books, co-author of some, and then author of one you've written alone, right? The On My Worst Day? Yeah. The other ones you wrote with the True-Faced Guys. And if you don't know them, then have I got a delightful summer for you. There's lots of good reading. Go look up John Lynch on Amazon. You'll find books like Beau's Cafe, True-Faced, The Cure, and the one we'll talk about today a bit, On Your Worst Day. And you will be challenged and blessed with a fresh understanding of how deeply God loves us. So, John, welcome to the God Journey.
Man, thank you, Wayne. What a treat.
That's a treat to have you again. Unfortunately, we're not face-to-face with each other, except through the miracle of Zoom. But last time we did this together. I was in Phoenix, and we had a chance to sit down. And,
right. That's right.
Yeah, we've not had a lot of contact between
those
two.
Whose home was that in Chandler? Whose home was that?
I was with the McInturfs in Gilbert, I think. Yeah.
Dear couple.
Yeah, dear friends. Looking forward. Maybe I notice you're getting out and doing a bit of traveling again since the pandemic.
I'm back on the road. I had that nice reprieve where I just walk around in my pajamas.
Yeah.
But that day is gone.
So you're back on it, huh? You got pretty full schedule coming up?
Just went to Washington, D.C. for the last 5 days speaking. Spoke at a banquet for Grace Ministries and then at Andrew Farley's brother's church and a couple other things at a farmer's market that was so cool that they wanted to do with the public. So
my schedule is still wide open. I had a few people say, hey, when the pandemic's over, we want you to come. And I'm going, great. But yeah, I'm fully vaccinated. So I'm traveling again as God leads. But
once they did the no mask thing, people are scurrying now going, okay, we can convene. So it's very, very fun. And I just have to be wise, not saying yes to everything and being oversaturated.
Well, I'm having a hard time saying yes to anything. I've really enjoyed my time home with Sarah. And the last 14 months have been awesome. And I've gotten quite a few projects done that I've had on my shelf for a long time. And I had one trip out recently, first time. And I'm fine to travel, but we'll see what God leads. I'm not sure where that happens yet, so.
What he has done with you while you've been not on the road, my friend Lewis, it kills me. I just finished it yesterday.
Oh, really? And got through the whole thing?
Except I haven't heard Rafa, so don't tell me about that. The new one where he sees Rafa again.
We haven't recorded that one yet. No one's heard that one. Everybody's like, when are we going to hear that one? And we've had a couple of times where Lewis and I have scheduled to get together and start down that road. And we've been interrupted. A lot of it's been my dad, and I've had to go out of town unexpectedly to help with my dad through a fall and some surgery and now recovery. So I don't know when we're going to get to that. I know people are kind of waiting because I've kind of hinted that, yeah, Rafa has come back and there's just some interesting stuff that ties the story together. But we haven't had a chance to record it yet, so it'll be a while.
If you haven't heard my friend Lewis, it's unlike anything I've ever experienced in a podcast for sure, but it locked me in the first 2 minutes because you do these like 3 minute preview kind of things. And I said, we're not in Kansas anymore. And it is magnificent and it's full of goodness and faith and life and honest life and your life. Wayne, you wouldn't have gone down this path. You wouldn't have chosen these events normally, historically, and now you go, I'm faced with this situation, I'm going to choose love. I was just proud of you listening to it.
It's been quite a journey. And for me, it's not the podcast. For me, it's my friendship with Lewis. That has been such an amazing journey. And it has changed me in ways, just like my friendship with Arnita when we were working on Language of Healing. And I just love the people in my life. And I thought pretty much the Lewis story had been resolved and when we finished the podcast. And now I realize, no, I'm in the middle of a bigger story than I knew and still in the middle. Right? We don't even know. Part of why we're not rushing to get the next part out is because we did the 12 episodes we were going to do. And now it's, I don't know where this story ends. I don't know where another good ending point is. We're just watching God unfold some really incredible stuff.
And I hope you don't lock that down before you start recording more, because it's so compelling, no matter where it's going to end.
Yeah, true. True.
Riveting stuff, man.
Well, welcome to my life. It is that way now. I live one day at a time, truly, and I don't ever try to put the end of a paragraph in anymore. It's just the day ends when it ends, and we'll get up tomorrow and see where that one goes.
You did that the other day with me. I had all these, talking to you about these grandiose plans to have more influence or whatever. You just went, yeah, that's nice.
Okay. God's won me out of that only because all of my incredible plans I've presented to God in three-ring binders and full of sketches and graphics and charts, and God just kind of tossed them over shoulder and saying, this is not my plan.
That was polite. That was nice, young fella. I like drawings. Don't get me wrong.
I like the effort. I love that you want to do stuff like this.
But I'm really, not going to use any of it.
Yeah. You want to go to the neighborhood park? I want to take you to Disneyland. So really, do you want it? Do you want your agenda? Or you want mine? And yeah. So we'll see where that ends. I have no idea, but I love the impact it's having. I love the email I get from people about My Friend Lewis. And if you haven't heard it yet, myfriendlewis.com, LUIS, and 12 episodes of someone's journey.
I'll say one more. Live, love, free, full. Look at this. This Stacy and I are going through, and because we're doing it together, we probably get to read together every 3 days. So we're not, look where I am.
We're not far in. Sarah and I get behind too. Sarah and I are reading it.
But it's just wonderful. Just wonderful.
Oh, I'm glad you're enjoying it. Thank you. Thank you for mentioning it. I appreciate that.
Yeah. You know what you do is, throughout this, you can't escape it. Are you going to allow your God to love you and stop performing for his love and not worry about how much love do you have to offer him? But you get to receive his love right now. And in 365 different ways, you're doing that. You're saying that message in a beautiful way. Just proud of you reading it.
That's neat. Thank you. That's the message that's close to your heart too, isn't it, John?
Yeah, it is. That I think that message of getting to convince others that they are endlessly loved, they just have to allow it and receive it and believe it, because it comes with an entire way of seeing, doesn't it? You have to say, God, that's really true. And I won't play the fool if I believe it. If I stop trying to perform and all these things that I've done to keep my merit up, okay, if I believe this, if I believe the scriptures on this, to the exact extent that my Father loves me, Jesus says, so also I love you. And I as I always say, you can question his taste, just don't question his character, you know. it's true. And as we believe it, it has the result you just spoke of. I don't worry about it. I'm in each day. It has the result in both of us of playfulness. We have the ability to be playful and creative because I don't have a boss who has a deadline, an agenda, and a pink slip waiting for me. I really have a God who just is willing to waste time with me because it's not wasted time.
Yeah.
I've believed that. I haven't completely unfolded all of what his love does, obviously, but those things have sure been absolute.
Yeah, and playfulness is not, I know people think of playfulness as just being, you know, frittering away our lives, when it's playfulness even in the midst of great pain and great challenge and great anguish. It's playfulness, I think, is the best way that we're in a space to perceive what God's about and what God's doing in our life. It's not escapism. It's not hiding in frivolous things. It really is. When I'm at play with God, even when I'm stretched to the ultimate, even when I'm in pain, that playfulness leads me into that life.
I always loved those old movies where the good guys had some bad guys and they were almost like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid would be a great example. In the midst of being surrounded by like 1,100 federales, they're giving each other a hard time. They're laughing. They're joking around. They're playful. And I always thought, that's what this is. In the midst of a world of chaos sometimes, of God says, I got you. And when I believe that, it allows me to be exceptionally in the moment and playful and safe because I know the outcome. I know he's got me. I know he will not make a mistake regarding me. And so it's not exactly like you said, it's not just frittering things away. It's sometimes in our most significant influence, people get to watch us like that and say, how do I do that? I feel like I don't have that. And that's when you get to offer what you've been offering in that devotion.
Unfortunately for Butch and Sundance, they were doing all that yucking around about the time they were going to get shot by all those federales. But I've been thinking of stuff like that. If you're going out, would you rather go out playful or cowering behind a post in terror? You know what I mean? You might, if you're going out, you might as well go out playful as opposed to whatever else. And I think that encourages us into the better space where God makes himself known. Well, if those of you who don't know John or haven't heard the podcast we did, I actually listened on my walk this morning. I listened to the podcast we did in 2014 about On My Worst Day because I didn't want to do a repeat of a podcast. And it's a good thing I did because everything I was set to talk about with you is in that podcast. We had a great conversation about so many wonderful things. So if you haven't heard that or it's so long ago you don't remember it, the link will be at the bottom of this podcast. Go back and hear that one and then listen to this one because I think that really sets up what I love about On My Worst Day, which is a book I've recommended as much as any other that I recommend to people when I'm traveling and people are struggling with things. And I'll tell you what I love about it. For those of you who don't know On My Worst Day, it's a story of your life. And it's a story of these joyful moments and painful moments and some severely painful moments in your past when you didn't know God. You had no relationship with him. You were raised by atheists and, you know, were the hippie, you know, the whole hippie age and dropping out with drugs and doing all kinds of goodies. And
But
when you tell those stories, you pause it. You kind of back off to consider if the God I know today would have said anything to me then, and surely he was. It went unheard, if not unsaid, right?
Just like a parent holding a child, he's talking to him, but the child can't understand yet.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you pause at each of the end of those. There's this clip of what might have God said, the God I know now, what might he have said to me on that day? And I've told people, man, if you're having trouble zeroing in on God's voice in your life, the difference between your voice, the condemning voice, in your, the religious voice, and where God might be, I think this is a great primer to that. This is a great way for people to go, ooh, God might say stuff like that to that guy going through that stuff. Then now I'm beginning to think, what might he be saying to me today in the situations I'm going through? And that's where I think the book, lots of other value, a lot of other tangential things to me, that hits a home run in this book.
Thank you, friend. I think that is the strongest motivation in that book is to give a consistent, clear voice of the Jesus who is crazy about us and was crazy about us from the start and has been wooing and talking that through even before I knew him, even when I was disdaining his name. So it's been a powerful journey to imagine that and still to, because early on I had that condemning voice, Wayne, while I was preaching. I was graduated from seminary. I was preaching at a church, and almost after every message I'd have some sense of some voice saying, well, funny boy, they liked you today, didn't they? Yeah. You know who wasn't taken in? Me. I'm on to you, and I know you're a phony, and I'm going to call you out, and you're going to get caught. And I'm going, what's he going to catch me? What am I going to get caught in? But that was the voice I heard. You know, don't get too excited. Don't let anything be good because you're not loved. You may be loved, but you are not liked. You have not taken advantage of what I carried that for a number of years and still trying to preach a buck up religion, and grace slowly won the day to where I never hear that voice anymore. That voice is, I don't know, it may come back sometime, but I don't, I think because people like yourselves and others, dear friends, have made me wise enough to know if there is condemnation, it's not him. If there is any sense of a to-do list or something that makes me feel like I'm behind or I can't catch up, it is never him. And to have that freedom allows me to not entertain such a voice.
Yeah, and you said earlier that you went from being an atheist to a believer to a religious performer really quick. You kind of went down that road. So you were in that whole mode of trying to earn this salvation that you had been given?
No church, no religious system did that to me. I did that to me. Like within 6 months of coming to trust him, I didn't feel his presence as much for a while. And I thought, I've done it again. I've screwed it up again. I knew I'd do that. And now I've got him disappointed with me. And saw the squirrel cage of trying to impress him or please him or do something to get back in his good graces. You know, I started that. This guy who thought nobody has ever loved Jesus like I'm going to love Jesus. You know, I came a little late into the game, but man, I'm giving up everything. I gave away my car and all my, I've done what the man did, the rich young ruler. And it broke my heart. I think I had a system. Just tell me, how many lawns do I mow a day? And that took some time to unravel. That self taught lie that carried the same old shame that had been with me my entire life. It worked now in a religious way, and it did take some time to really believe. Even if I don't feel him, even if I don't experience him, if I could see behind the veil, I'm being loved as much as any person on this planet.
How did you come alive to that? I mean, it wasn't overnight. It wasn't, you didn't have some euphoric moment when everything transformed, but how did God draw you away from that performance-based stuff and really helped you begin to understand his heart for you?
Thanks. I know you know the answer, and so in you asking, it's pretty humble because I've heard you say, I'm not sure that I trust groups much larger than eight in terms of when they start to get leadership and they start to develop, and you let me...
You've heard me say stuff like that, John? Really? That doesn't sound like me.
But regardless, you had me endorse that book, you know, that spoke to that. It was wonderful. But I stumbled into one of those rare environments where there was a group of people, a community.
A congregation.
A congregation, yeah. Who carried this message, and there was no trapdoor, and you could sense it. You could feel it. It was palpable when you walked in there that they didn't have an agenda, that there wasn't some gotcha. And it took me a while. I was actually being allowed to preach in that church, even though I was just preaching moralism. I didn't know better. But eventually, something about the nonverbal, even more than the verbal, of that community, of watching them risk out this life of grace together. Now, we have since had many hard roads to hoe. My son is now the pastor at Open Door Fellowship. So all the way from me being there as a guy who didn't know these things to pastoring all these years, to some weirdness along the way with our community, to having my son, I think, do it better than it's been done at Open Door. I don't know who he is. I know he was raised in my home, but God's hand's doing something on him. But really, it wasn't, in the same way that it wasn't a community that messed me up, it was a community, a congregation that allowed me to hear God and hear his grace. And I remember this Sunday, I'd read Brennan Manning's in the week before. I can't even remember what it was, but one of his books, And I was going through Ephesians 1. And in fact, it's in this book when I have that incredible awakening where I get to say to Open Door, you guys, I've been bluffing like I know what I'm talking about. I know the Greek and Hebrew, and I don't know enough to be able to even, but I've been lying to you that I do. Anyway, I'm learning this, and if you're willing to let me go along with you, I would love to learn it in front of you. And well, that was 30-some years ago.
Yeah.
So it's been a joyous ride, just a magnificent ride.
I love when community makes it awkward for us to live in ungrace. You know, most of our communities make it easiest for us to live in ungrace. It rewards the performance thing.
And in their setting, I was the anomaly,
right?
You know, and they gently wooed me out of that, but I knew I was the anomaly. I knew it.
And I think that's such a powerful piece for God, whether that community is a friend down the street or that community is a congregation or that community is a small group in a home or whatever. Find people around you who make it easier to live on the grace side of your heart, to live inside the love of the Father rather than live inside the suspicion that I may not be good enough and I may not be doing enough. And that will be very helpful.
Well, I was just out in D.C. and you have done so much of going out to different communities and encouraging those communities. Barry Schoen showed up and just said, do you know that that's what Wayne did for me long, long ago when I didn't know how to do it for myself. And so it is sometimes one person at a time, sometimes an entire congregation teaches a preacher how to preach.
Yeah. And it definitely, I think it makes it easier for us to enter into what it is to be playful, what it is to embrace God's goodness, what it is to trust love when everything in me is raging at, I'm not good enough, I'm not loved, I'm not enough for God. And it helps to have voices around your heart. Barry wrote me that he finally had a chance to meet you, and yeah, he was excited.
Great.
So, yeah. So you have, I think as I followed your story in recent years, a little bit on Facebook and whatever, you've had some really severe challenges in your life, medically speaking. And I love that you continue to very honestly unpack your, I guess one of the questions I have for you is, why are you so honest about the things in your life that most people hide? Let me say it that way.
Yeah. Well, one is obviously what we believe is vulnerability and authenticity elicits trust from others and gives them a safe place. And so if there was a reason, that's part of it. I want to be known in a way. I was a chameleon. I think you read it throughout the book. I was a chameleon for so long. What do I need to be in this setting for you to love me? What mask do I need to put on to be enough to be loved? And after a while, I realized if I wear a mask, I've just defeated our relationship because I can't hold it up. I can't keep it together. So if you're not getting the real me, if I'm just going to see you for 1 hour, go ahead with the mask. but if you and I are going to know each other, eventually you'll see the inauthenticity of the mask wearing. So I have, because I know what I'm capable of when I hide, I know where I can go. It's almost like for my benefit, I need to tell you. I need to make sure that there's places, and I don't tell everything on Facebook, but there have to be some places where it isn't hidden because it makes us sick. That hiddenness just makes us sick. So I have to have a few best friends, a few close friends who know me. I have to have my wife who knows me, and I have to have a community who knows me, because I also think that one of the things I love this book is I'm having, if they ask, you don't have a study guide, how would I go through this thing? And I just say, especially with men, we can get together and figure out how to talk sports and just superficial stuff, high-powered leveraging stuff for a long, long time. And we can talk God, sort of, and we can talk sexual sin that we may have failed on or something. But to be authentic and vulnerable, these guys up in Seattle, and now they're spread out all over the country, but they've been on Zoom together during COVID. They've been doing this forever. And they each picked a story from the book and said, which one's important to you and resonates with you? And then tell us some about your life or why it does. These cats, they went so beautifully vulnerable that their wives said, what's happened? Who are you? So I think that's also one of the reasons I wrote the book, is I want people to know that it's not odd to be honest, to let people know your stuff. I don't trust largely a lot of preachers because I don't hear the vulnerability. I hear constantly the success narrative. And then I told him this, and he understood that I knew that. And I just go, no, stop it. That doesn't do it. So I'm trying to model that, I think, for me and for the benefit of others. Thanks for asking that, man.
Oh, one of the first people I worked with in ministry, I remember him saying to me, I'm afraid that when you get to know me, you won't respect me anymore. And this has been a longstanding guy who's been up in front of crowds speaking a lot. And I'm thinking, wow. So the whole thing, even I was really young and green and all that, but I was thinking, wow, that's what you live with. There's the me that's on the stage, and then there's the real me over here. And I keep those two very separate. And yep. I realized a while back on this journey that I can't really help you if you don't know the real me. If I'm an illusion in your mind of somebody more spiritual, more holy, more flawless, more something, then you can discount what I say because it's not for you. It's only for people like me. And for people to know the struggle is so important. Like you said, it really, you know, vulnerability begets vulnerability. And people often say to me, I don't have these conversations like you have. Why not? And I say, most of my conversations begin with my vulnerability. I'll share something that then allows somebody else to grab onto and ride that train with me.
And they will. I was just with a group of people and they can't stop doing it because they know you've bared your throat. So you're a safe person. But I still... A side story. I'm going to Panama. Stacy and I are going to Panama to marry a couple in a few weeks.
Wow.
Payne Amendia was a friend of mine in college. Haven't been in touch with him. He's been in El Salvador. He's whatever it is he's doing there in Panama. And he came to Christ recently. This girl in the hospital who follows us, follows you, follows me, helped lead him to trusting Jesus with him. Wow. And so they want me to come out, and they're doing all this stuff to have me come out and buying airline tickets and such. And I said this morning, I'm afraid when you see me, you're going to go, it's just him. And she says, we already know. Yeah, we already know it's just you. And we delight in it. So you come, it's just you, and don't do anything else. I mean, that conversation happened this morning. That's and great. Now I'm so safe, Wayne. I will go into that setting and go, here I am, Mr. Whatever I am. And they get to get the best of me. Isn't that interesting? Once I know that, they will get the best of me. They won't get the religious, because I can still do it. I mean, if I think I'm in a setting that demands that, I can still pull out religio guy, you know.
You got that ecclesiastical pastoral voice still in there?
Oh, I got it. I can say God in four syllables. How's your walk with Godwood? Wow. It's still there.
Yeah, wow. You write this in I'm On My Worst Day. As long as I believe God's goal for my life should be painless, smooth, validation, and happy endings, I will live in a cognitive dissonance, which will eventually cause me to pull back and protect myself We can slip into the dangerous thinking that if he's good and powerful, our lives would be smoother and less messy than others. Bad guys should lose more often. Good guys should win most often. Sometimes it doesn't work out that way. Often it doesn't.
Sure.
How has your conviction of God's love survived the disappointments when you would think if God loved me, this would not happen to me?
Yeah.
How have you survived that? How's your faith survived that?
Yeah. I physical things have happened to me that I never counted on. This neuropathy has its mean. It's not, doesn't play fair. It's this small fiber neuropathy just that burns in my feet constantly.
Tons of pain.
And yeah. So I hate it. I think it is tested. Stacy on one hand says, John, you have to let out your pain sometimes and frustration and hurt and sadness. You can't. I know your thinking. I know your theology of his goodness, even in the midst of this. You know, Wayne, what has protected me? If one verse was not in the Bible, I think I'd be a mess. But when he says, I really do, John, I cause every single thing that happens to you to work together for my glory and your best. Not everything's good. Some things are wicked and horrible and chronic and violent and sick, but I will take the warp and woof and fiber of that, and I will not let things through that will harm or destroy you. I will reshape and refashion and make beautiful to help mature you, make your life more wondrous, make you be able to see me more clearly, make you be able to see yourself and your friends more clearly. If that wasn't in scripture, I know that I would have the nature of God to fall back. But that is such a powerful statement to me. It's such helps me make sense of so much. And so to know right now, and then 2 Corinthians 4:16, where he says, I'm renewing you every moment of every day. Yes, you got neuropathy. The outer man's decaying. There's all sorts of rough stuff that you guys got coming facing you now that you're in your 60s. But that beautiful thing that he says, there isn't a moment when you may not think you deserve it or you're asleep or you think you've done something wrong. I never miss a moment where I'm not renewing you and redeeming your story. And okay, if that's true, then I'm all in. I'm right here. I'm staying in the arena.
Yeah, that's awesome. For people to know, why are we doing this book again if he published it in 2014? You've republished it recently, and you've added
40 stories. Yeah,
40 stories to bring people up to date on your life. So that's kind of a republished. On My Worst Day, it's subtitled The Narrative Changes When Redemption Enters In. I think that's what you're getting to with renewal right now. When you know God's always renewing. I was with a man yesterday, late in life, going through some very difficult stuff, and almost reiterated the words of Jesus from the cross. God has abandoned me. And I said, well, we both know that God doesn't do that. I get that you feel abandoned. I get it. We've all had those moments where we feel it. But there's also that reality that what we feel and what's real, and that's holding the feelings to suspicion instead of holding God to the suspicion.
Gosh, that's it. I will be stealing that as soon as tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, you can steal it today. It's fine with me. But I think that's
a 24-hour period. I don't know.
But we've got people who listen to this podcast, I know, because we have a lot of people who circulated new to this podcast. I get email all the time. I just found your podcast a few months ago. And what you said a few moments ago about knowing that who just me is enough to be delighted in. I think people, that's the thing that would liberate people. If you could just know that not only to other people, I may not be true. In an evil world, just you may not be enough. But to God, just you is enough for him to delight in. That's and right. If you knew that, it would change your life.
Amen. It's, I think John, the gospel writer, knew it. He said, he writes about himself, the one whom Jesus loved. It's like, I'm not sure about Peter and Andrew, but I know for a fact that
he loves me
over the top crazy about me.
Yeah.
Isn't that beautiful that he writes the one whom Jesus loved?
Yeah.
But the craziness that God said before the world began, I want there to be a John Lynch on this planet at this time for a certain group of people, and nobody is going to be able to love them in the same way that he will and protect them. And he says, I cannot wait for the planet to get to see my boy.
Hmm.
And I love him as much as anyone on this planet. There's nothing you can do to make me love him more. Nothing you can do to make me love him less. I just am crazy with who I created. And now I just want to see him get to live life. And I'll stand with him. And I'll protect him. And I'll mature him in it. But I'm over the top crazy about it. And I go, you know what I've done, right? I mean, it must have been like that night when Levi invited his friends to be with Jesus and had him over for dinner. And at some point, as he's laughing at their jokes and enjoying the evening, there must have been a point where one of them said, but you know what I've done, right? And I imagine Jesus saying, yeah, and I unfortunately know what you're going to do tomorrow also. But I love you. And I came here for you so that you would be free to know that I love you by the cross and the resurrection. And that's a powerful, powerful gift. So I sometimes fall back like I did in that situation in Panama where I go, you are making a big deal about me coming. And I'm not sure you know who I really am. I'm worth maybe one-way ticket, but not. Yeah. And for them to say, we already know who you are, and it's enough.
Yeah.
What a gift for friends to give each other, to tell the same truth that God's trying to teach.
And if you are sitting there saying, well, it's just great for John, but not for me, this is for you too. This is what God wants you to discover. He wants to show you. He wants to put people in your life to help encourage it. In the new part of the book, you write this, and I know I hate when people read my words to me when I'm on a podcast, but I'm on a
I loved it. Well. It was just so fun. You did a better job than I did with the last piece.
How do I describe playful, God-centered freedom? I can't. I only know I stumbled into it. And that is the reason I will make it through the storms I'm faced with. For a while, I was the most sold-out, diligent, religious guy you'd ever meet, but I was miserable. Few were more miserable than a religiously miserable person. These days, I may become maybe sad, confused, or bewildered, but I've never been that miserable guy from my past again. There's something about knowing for certain that God is absolutely delighted with your very being that changes everything.
Yeah.
But you can't speed up the process of believing your complete acceptance. You can't speed up the process of believing you're adored. You can't speed up the process of believing you are righteous, that he lives in you, and that you don't need to become someone you think you're supposed to be. And it goes on and on. I mean, this is a great page because it just says you can't get there faster than you get there. And somehow, what can you say, John, to somebody that's really struggling with this? Maybe they've heard you. They've heard your Two Roads talk 10, 12 times. They've read On Your Worst Day. They've read these books. But inside, they're still, I don't see that yet. I want to see that. I pray every day God helps me see that, but I don't. Do you have words for them?
Yeah. First of all, you're not a phony. Someone wrote to me the other day and says, I feel like you said that too, John, but I feel like a phony. You're not a phony because you haven't been able to catch up yet with what you know is true. Somebody will call you a phony, or you'll think, I have these thoughts that you don't know about. It's all right. You are right on time. And just let him keep maturing you. That voice that says, yeah, I'm on to you, buddy. That voice gradually, as you just let him and trust that he could possibly be who he says he is in you, and that he has made you into a new creature day by day by day by day. You won't even notice because he's renewing you every moment, renewing your heart and your mind. And one day you wake up and go, oh my gosh, I believe this. And it's counting. It's counting on how I treat my family and how I treat me, on how what I do when I'm embarrassed and how I let people protect me. And Jesus, how I see your endless love for me and delight of me. And as you read the book, you realize I was not there. I was fully not there for a long time. and I tried to do the Religio Man. So it's really great for me to be able to say I'm right on time and I'm not a fake just because I can't quite catch up yet.
That's good. I think this is a process that God is in control of, but I do think we cooperate with it. It helps it move ahead, or we don't. Yeah. And I do want people to say, gosh, I hear you two talking, and this is the way I want to live in that freedom. And I love that you acknowledge, hey, this is a process. This is a journey. There's a renewing work that goes on, because the embedded thoughts, whether they're our own performance or the religious performance that's been put on us, and the voices that seem so real, of course I'm not good enough. Of course I should try harder. Those voices seem more true than the God.
Right.
Yeah. And the God that says, I already delight in you. I already love you. And I want you to come and live in the joy of that. And I will show you that. I will keep working in your life until you become settled in that reality. If you can find some voices around you, or read a book like On My Worst Day, or He Loves Me, or The Shack, or whatever, there's just lots of tools that can help you think inside that reality. But part of you's got to say, okay, this is true for me. I may not know that yet. I may not live that yet, but it is true. And I want to lean toward that reality. That's what I hope.
That's right. So good for you to say that. These two guys are not Gnostic. They're right here. We are all being asked to believe the same thing.
Yeah.
And we're all capable of it. Isn't that great? Wouldn't have asked it if he didn't think that who I was now was capable of receiving that love every single day.
And isn't that what it means to believe in Christ? It's to believe what he thinks of us. It's to believe who he is, who he says he is, and that he delights in us as his creation. That's the hard work of believing. It's easier to believe I'm a piece of crud and I don't deserve anything and my life just sucks and that's just the way it is. Or that, you know, God's not there and so these bad things are happening to me and God doesn't care because he just let... No, you have a God who cares, who loves, who delights, and you're living a world riddled with chaos. And bringing those two realities together in your heart is the work of the Spirit of God in us. And hopefully the joy of fellowship with the brothers and sisters in your life. And if not, get better brothers and sisters, even if you've got to do them in a book for a while, because God does delight in you. John, I want to thank you for taking time with me today and time with our listeners at The God Journey and just sharing your journey. I hope people pick up this book, as some of you others, and explore this journey the way it needs to be uncovered in them. Thanks, John.
I mean, thanks for your friendship, man. This is a delight.
Oh, it's a delight for me too, more than you know.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.